Hello and welcome to Democracy in Action. My name is Sunny Martin. We are coming to live from Juba this Thursday. And today we are going to be looking at the electoral process and the participation of citizens, and also educating you on how the electoral process is done. And we have experts here in the studio who are going to be telling us more about this process and giving their inside story on all what we are going to be sharing. And our lines will be open to you later on, where you can call on 0912062079 or 0912062950, or you can send us your comment or question to our SMS number 0912177141. Those are all our contacts. You can get in touch with us here during our discussion today on Democracy in Action. I have two of my guests right here. I have with me Juma Mabior Marial, who is the Executive Director of African Leadership and Reconciliation Ministry, known as ALAM. Good morning and welcome to Red Mirror, Mr. Juma.
Good morning, Sunday.
And I also have Costas Lugageli, right?
Yes.
Okay. And she is the Deputy Chief of the United Nations Integrated Electoral Assistance Team here. And she will be telling us more about it. You are most welcome to Red Mirror.
Thank you, Sunny, and good morning to the audience.
Okay. First of all, Mr. Juma, let us begin with you here. The country is now, most of the talks in the town and in most parts of the country is election. We have heard from the top leadership. First of all, what is your general overview on this preparation for the upcoming election in December 2024?
Thank you, Sunny, and the listeners. And I really appreciate the opportunity to share with you this morning in this critical topic of our time. And I think this is the right time to discuss and let people understand the dynamics about elections. And I really appreciate the fact that the country now is having the conversation around election and election and election. Everywhere you go to, it is all about election. It is a bit complicated to have a straightforward answer on what my position or my evaluation of the election can be, because there are still a lot of conversation going on among the political parties, and especially the parties to the agreement. But what is important to note, especially by the citizen of this country and all of us, is that there is a roadmap that ends with the election and the transition that ends with the election. So at the end of it, we must all understand that election is the end point of the transitional period. And therefore, whatever happens in between here, we must be able to address ourselves to that end. So, to come back to your question, the political parties are engaging in dialogue, and I think for the past 3 days or the 2 days, the president of South Africa, Cyril Ramaphosa, is in the country.
Okay.
And is having conversation with the principal to the agreement and other political parties to the agreement to discuss on how best they can be able to approach the election as the transitional period end. And we hope that the discussion is going to materialize, and we shall be able to look at how best we can be able to carry the election at the end of the day.
Okay. Yes, because the UN here is a partner in peace building, and that's what people know the mission for. What role can the international organization, more especially the UNMISS and the other donor partners, can play in supporting electoral reforms and capacity building efforts in this country?
The UN has established an integrated electoral assistance team, which the two main components are UNMISS and UNDP, but we also have on board UN Women and UNESCO, and we're working closely with other components of both the UNMISS and country team. The specific mandate of the integrated electoral assistance team is that to support in this first phase of the process the enabling environment. And I would say that critical to that is support the nascent institution like obviously the National Election Commission, but also working with the Political Party Council in building the institution. So that is, electoral institutions are critical in general for the specific conduct of elections, but as a means of building trust in the process. So this is what we are focusing on right now.
Okay, and just a follow-up from where you have just stopped. We wanted to find that from you. It was announced last week by the commission, that the National Election Commission, that they will be moving to the states to also do some kind of assistance. To what extent is ANMIS involved in this visit to the states? What kind of support are you offering to the commission?
We work in partnership with the NEC, and so the NEC established its priorities, and we provide advice in terms of comparative experience and try to tailor good practice to the context of South Sudan. To this end, one of the priorities that the National Election Commission has announced for the past couple of weeks is institution building. To this end, following the legal framework, there is a requirement to re-establish the state and administrative areas committees, which are the operational arms of the National Election Commission for the actual implementation of elections in this field, in the field. So to this end, UNMIS and UNDP, so the integrated team, is in close partnership with the European Union. We are supporting by, you know, with our organization bases in the field, with flights, because obviously that
is... Yeah, logistic is a big challenge.
Yes, it's a big challenge. And so the visit started on Sunday. It was a very rainy... On Monday, 15th of April, it was a very rainy day. So some of the flights have been rescheduled, but thankfully the delegations have reached their destinations, and they are, you know, with a double focus of setting up its own institutions, but also engaging, which is also a priority for the National Election Commission, in engaging with political parties and civil society in order to create this enabling environment. So we are partnering with NEC on these visits.
Okay, before we hear from Juma, also one very important component which the listeners out there have already heard about, and it will be very important for you to shed more light. It was also announced by the spokesperson of the Commission, on the National Election Commission, that they are going to establish their own website, and this website is going to help in giving out accurate information. And they are saying that you, ANMIS, is one of the partners supporting them in establishing this website.
Yes, that is correct. And again, I would like to point out that the establishment of the website is again one of the key elements in terms of the institution building as a means of communication that transcends even the borders of South Sudan, and will be able to reach South Sudanese citizens outside the country. We are partnering on that as a nascent institution. The National Election Commission has ask for support in terms of, you know, the technical specifications and the development of the website. So we are engaging in conversations, obviously, and based on the requirements of the National Election Commission, both on the graphics of the website and the technical development from the ICT point of view.
All right. And Juma, what are the roles or what are the rights and the responsibilities of South Sudanese, those who are eligible according to our law, should be 18 and above, right? Yes. What are the roles of these South Sudanese who are from 18 and above in the electoral process and even beyond the voting?
Yeah, as a citizen, you have responsibilities, and you also have the right in any process, including the election process. And one of the rights of the citizen of South Sudan is for them to be registered so that they can be able to vote and be voted for in any elections that come about. And they can do this one in such a way that they are free to do so without being politically intimidated or being politically influenced. They can also be able to ask any information, just like what we are doing now. If the political parties councils are doing the registration of the political parties, the citizen have the right to know how do you register a political party, such that if they have the capacity to do so, they can also be able to go and register their political parties. And they can also go to the Electoral Commission and ask about the process.
So it is their right.
It is their right to go there and ask about how far the process are and what is required of them as citizens of this country, because that is part of their democratic right. And they also can receive any information about the registration and IDs. For example, most of the South Sudanese now do not have IDs. They are 18 years and above.
The national IDs.
The national IDs. Mm. And you know, you cannot register as a voter without a national ID. Mm. So it is also about time when people are talking about election, then South Sudanese who is over 18 years and above should be able now to start getting a national ID so that it can facilitate their registration as voters. And then they can also be able to get to know what type of voting they are going to do, because voter education is very important, and it is their right to receive such information before it is too late, because at the end of the day, people may be unable to understand how the voting system goes. And I think this is the role of all of us to start enlightening people about their rights, so that they are able to understand what their rights are. But in terms of responsibility also, they are also supposed to familiarize themselves with their political system. You know, what is the political system in South Sudan? You start reading about the constitution, even the election act and the rest of the thing. So you have a duty as a citizen to familiarize yourself with some of these things. And then know where you are supposed to be voting. You know, most of us are in Juba, and maybe I'm registered in Lagos State. So that should be my polling location.
Yeah,
so that I'm able to understand that when the election is start, I will not just be voting in Juba. I'll have to go to Lagos State. Or if I have registered in Juba, I should not be in Lagos State when it is time for voting. So these are some of the right and responsibility that the citizen should be able to know. And I think this requires a lot of civic education and awareness.
Now, in your opinion, do you think the parties and partners, including you, should embark on serious awareness to the people?
Absolutely. This is the time that we should start, and it should have even started long time ago, not even now, because we are barely 8 months away from the election. So this one should start immediately, if it has not started.
Okay. Yes, from your international expertise, what are the key principles that should guide the electoral process, and how can they be upheld in real terms or in a practical manner?
Well, the principles for elections are enshrined in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. I don't want to use big words, but basically the simple concept is that it is the will of the people that is the basis for authority of government. So this is a very clear principle that is enshrined in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It is again explained in more details in the UN Covenant for Civil and Political Rights and in other regional instruments on the continent here and in other parts of the world. In practice, this means that citizens have the right to periodic and genuine elections, to universal suffrage and equal suffrage, and the secrecy of the votes. This in practice translates in major responsibility from the electoral administration, but other parties, other actors in the process, to ensure that the process is transparent, inclusive, fair, and has integrity. And that is really critical. I would like to to really focus on two aspects here. Mm-hmm. The fact that the integrity and all the other principles are based on the implementation of the existing legal framework. So all the actors should really work to implement that legal framework that ensures all the principles that I just listed. And then on the side, but equally important, is the environment. The environment has to be enabling a full participation of citizens.
Right. And Juma, this expected election is, if it happens, will be the first of its kind since South Sudan attained its independence, and also it's going to be a post-conflict election. How can this electoral process contribute to reconciliation and peace-building effort?
Elections, by their nature, are strategies for promoting democracy. And since 2005 and coming to 2010, South Sudan has never had the opportunity, because of the different circumstances, to hold elections. And therefore, it will be an opportunity for the South Sudanese now to exercise their rights of electing their own leaders. In 2010, we were discussing with Condesa earlier, before we came to the studio, that every election happened for a reason. The one in 2010 happened for the referendum, and it did not give us a lot of opportunity as South Sudanese to decide on who our leader should be. We were electing the referendum representative such that they can take us across the river. And indeed, it happened, and it happened successfully. Now, this election will be an opportunity for South Sudanese to elect their own representative after having studied them and see that these are the people that can be able to represent them. And it can bring a collection of different tribes to even choose one that do not belong to their communities. For example, if you look at Juba, it's a metropolitan constituency, whereby if any MP stand for Juba constituency, all of us from across South Sudan are going to vote for that particular representative, regardless of which tribes he comes from. So therefore, it will be an opportunity for South Sudanese, one, to exercise their democratic right, and then also be able to crisscross on their political areas and affiliation on who they really want. And then also, elections can help the citizen to express their expectation. You know, the political parties will come out and give their manifestos, and they will now enter into the contract. You know, they call it the social contract principle, whereby they will now be able to negotiate with their leaders, political leaders, on what they would want to be done. And that negotiation will not be based on an empty ground. You know, people will have to come together regardless of where they come from, and that in itself would be able to reconcile. And of course, the election will end the transition, because you have seen the government being divided along party lines and tribal lines and the rest of the thing. So when the election is done, the citizen will be able to choose people that will represent them on the principle of democracy, not because they come from the tribe and the rest of the thing.
Okay.
So I think that will be a basis for reconciliation for the country.
Right. And has the deputy chief for the United Nations Integrated Electoral Assistant Team here in Juba, what lesson do you think can be learned from post-conflict elections, both successfully and those that had some challenges, to promote democracy and peace in South Sudan?
I would say after 25 years of working in support of...
It's over 2.5 decades.
Yes, that means I'm not that young anymore.
A rich experience.
I really had the honor to work a little bit across the planet. And one thing I think we can learn as a lesson, that it is the political and collective will of the country to move from a conflictual situation to long-lasting peace and democratic systems, that it's really the drive of success or non-success of an electoral process. The electoral process per se is a key element. It's a necessary element once a country decided to go that way. But I think that something that we tend to forget is what comes after elections really determines sustainable peace. That means the behavior of those that take office through the electoral process, and the ability to create a system of governance that is sustainable. And I'm thinking specifically, I will not mention countries in respect of, you know, of the people of those countries, but the judiciary, the establishment of a robust judiciary system seems to me, and in the analysis that the UN has done during the past decades, is that is essential. The establishment of a robust security forces system, also very important, education, and in general accountability of government, because we have to remember that, you know, one of the principles, as we said at the beginning of our discussion, is that elections, in order to be really significant, need to be periodic and not only genuine.
Right. And any of you can answer this question. You can maybe come in, Juma, later on. Or first of all, we have this 35% affirmative action that is also enshrined in the agreement. In the context of South Sudan, what measures do you think can be implemented to increase the participation of youth, women, and also the marginalized group in the electoral process, both as voters, like you earlier on said, those who are 18 and above can also be a candidate, or you can be a voter?
Yeah, I came across, when I was doing some of the research, reading about the women involvement in the electoral process and the governance system, I came through a research written by a young South Sudanese lady. In fact, there are two of them, all young women in political institutions in South Sudan.
Yeah.
And they titled "The Lesson Learned from Live Experience." This is from Maluela Tem and Eva Lopa, where they said, in order for women to be highly involved, and even the young women, there need to be support in civic engagement, such that in schools, in universities and community structures, and then they also invest in pluralistic, democratic, multi-party system. And this call for the involvement of women at all the party levels, because some young ladies, based on our cultural practices, are prevented from even being members of the political parties. And if you are not a member of the political party, you cannot be able to even contest in the election. So these young women are also advocating for the involvement of young people in the political structures of the country, and also building alliance with different institutions such that they are promoted. And of course, the young people, our laws, legal framework, from the Universal Declaration of Human Rights to the Constitution to the Political Parties Act and even the Election Act, they are very clear on the minimum age of participating in the election. If you are from 18 and above, you start participating. You can agree with me, Sandy. You and I can even contest for presidency in this country, because when you are 40 years and above, you can contest as a governor, you can contest as a president, and then from 21 years you can contest as an MP. So I think this is an open opportunity for the youth and young people and the women to start participating. And the good news is that in the Political Parties Act, and also in the Election Act, there are provision for specific percentages, like the 35%, the issues of affirmative action, and the party list. So all this representation can bring on board the youth, the women, and even other marginalized groups in participating in the political electoral process.
Right. If you have just joined us right now, you are listening to Democracy in Action. My name is Sunny Martin, and in the studio, I have two of my guests. You can call and ask your question on 0912062079 or 0912062950, or you can send us your question to our SMS number 0912177141. Those are all our contacts. You can get in touch with us here as we discuss the electoral process, looking at the civic education and all this. And we do have a couple of questions coming in via our SMS number. This one here is coming from James. James is asking his question to the ANMIS team, Constance, and he says, what are some of the challenges ANMIS and other partners who are willing to support the electoral process in this country? What do you foresee in terms of logistic, given that some parts of the country are still engulfed by flood? So this is coming from James Taban. And another SMS here is going to Juma. It's coming from Deng in Tomping here in Juba. He says, what can be done according to you? I believe you are from the civil society group. What can be done to ensure that we have a free, fair election that will be accepted by all parties and even recognized internationally, given our differences in terms of the way South Sudanese understand politics? Another SMS here is asking Juma again. It's from Marielle. Yeah, Marielle in Rumbek says, yes, Juma, you are most welcome to Radio Miraya. It's good to hear your voice today. And he says, you are aware about the subnational violence or intercommunal conflict taking toll in the lives of people in this country. Some areas cannot be accessed by many people at the moment now because of the intercommunal conflict. To what extent do you think this can impact on the conduct of a free, fair, and democratic election come December 2024? These are the three questions. Let's begin with Constance, the challenges ANMIS foresee.
Okay. Good morning, James. Thank you for the question. So, I mean, you're right on the spot. One of the challenges that South Sudan has is the logistics of the operation. The elections are one of the largest logistic operation that a country takes at times of peace. And the level of infrastructure, the terrain, the climatic conditions make the election process very challenging. We've seen it in the past. I had the honor to serve here during the referendum and here in Juba. And in order to overcome these challenges, I think the solution is a clear joint effort from the government, the election commission, and international partners in proper planning and then implementation. So planning, I think, it's the key to overcome or minimize the challenges. And I would like to take the opportunity now to quote Nelson Mandela, mm-hmm. that used to say, it always seems impossible until it is done. So I am confident that when all the parties in the actors come together in South Sudan with a clear determination of supporting the National Election Commission in its mandate to implement elections, and the international community continues supporting, I think it can be done, but it will remain challenging. So planning.
Okay. Yes, Juma, you have two questions. There's intercommunal or subnational violence. To what extent do you think it will have a negative effect on the conduct of the election? And also another question is, what can be done to ensure that we have a free, fair election that can be accepted by all parties and everybody, and also recognized or accepted internationally by our friends and partners?
Thank you, Deng and Marielle, for your questions. I think they are very much similar in nature, except the intercommunal aspect of it. But the question is the credibility and the fairness of the election. And my colleague Contessa has already talked about the principles that guide the elections. And when you interpret this principle in details, they would include how you subguide the election, how you oversee, how you do a lot of enforcement, because election is a contested practice. And therefore, there will be adversaries in the election when it comes to the conclusion, and especially in unveiling the results. For example, when one contestant is contesting against the other and the other one lost, there should be sub-guide on what needs to be done. For example, you have to have the court system whereby people have to go to courts and then the court determine the issues that are brought before them. So that is one way of determining the pre-fair and credible election. But when it comes to the intercommunal violence now, that is why people are talking about the prerequisite for the election in terms of security establishment, whereby there need to be a stable security environment. When people are going out for election, there will be no intimidation, there will be no violence, and people can be able to exercise their democratic right through voting without any intimidation or fear of threat or intimidation. So I think this is all going back to the Electoral Commission on how they are making their rule of conduct, how they are doing the putting the ethical procedures in place. And then it also goes to the government, because election, apart from being a people-driven process, is also a government project, so that the government can put in place security measures. And this is where the Ministry of Interior, the information I have is that the Ministry of Interior is putting in place security measures for electoral processes. Mm-hmm. So I think the issues of intercommunal violence have been very perennial in this country, and there is need for all the political actors and even the security institution to ensure that the country is stabilized before you go to December 2024, if you are to do a peaceful, credible, and fair election.
Yes, and Morris in Tomping here in Juba is, I appreciate the topic today, and I would like to thank the two guests in the studio. They are very eloquent. I have understood most of the things you have said, and he says my question goes to the Anmis guest in the studio, and he's asking, we know that civic education have not started, and the government at the moment is having challenges in terms of finance. To what extent will ANMIS support the National Election Commission in terms of civic education for the electoral process? That's from Morris in Juba here. And then another question is coming from no name, but do write your name, please, at the end of your question. And says, my question is going to the executive director of ALAM. And it says, Juma, you are fully aware about the issue of civic space, which is one of the major challenges at the moment now. What, in your capacity, are you doing to advocate for civic space so that people can freely participate and exercise their democratic right as enshrined in our laws? Yes, let's begin with Constance.
Yes, thank you, Maurice, for your question. I believe it is now very clear, because the National Election Commission has been repeating this for the past 2 months since their appointment in at the beginning of January, that civic and voter education is one of the foundation of this process and for meaningful participation of citizens. And this falls also under phase one of the support that the UN is providing to NEC and other actors. So it is true that you are not seeing posters and messaging around. This is because NEC is preparing for that. And even for a voter education campaign, we have to be strategic, develop a strategy, a plan, and then move forward to implementation. So this is happening. and we are supporting together with other partners. There is JICA from Japan, there is FES and other partners. So we are gearing up and we are actually already supporting this. You remember earlier we were talking about the website. This is also something that it's at heart of NEC and will contribute to disseminating proper information. So NEC is the National Election Commission is working on this, and there are already meetings that have been held with civil society, engagement with civil society, in order for the National Election Commission to actually have a comprehensive and inclusive strategy and plan, so that the voices of women, persons with disabilities and other vulnerable groups are included in the process. So it is ongoing and it will be more apparent. I hope
when the time comes.
Very soon.
All right. Maybe you said, people have not been seeing billboards and people moving around and campaign mode and all this. We hope when the time comes, people will be seeing. Yes, Juma, there was this question about your role in ensuring that there is a civic space for people to participate freely and exercise their democratic right as enshrined in the constitution.
I think the question of civic space has been surfacing every time there are discussion about election and other democratic processes, and I think it's not only about civic but also political space, whereby some of the political parties are complaining that they are not being granted the opportunity to interact with some of their constituencies. And I think this is an opportunity for all the political leaders and the government to ensure that this question is addressed, because if you are to have a civic engagement meeting where you want to enlighten people about elections or the electoral laws or the procedures, why would you need a permission from a national security or the police to do that? Because you are a pre-citizen and you are going to talk about some of the democratic principles that are guiding this country. So as a civil society, I'm one of the core members of the civil society forum, and just last month we had a very big conversation with different political actors, and we addressed this issue of the civic space, such that people that need to meet and discuss anything democratic, anything that is not against the law, should not be restricted. And we are continuing to engage the authorities on why they should not be able to limit the freedom of association, because these are all stipulated in the Bill of Rights, and that is a major chapter of our constitution and also in our international instrument, which South Sudan has ratified, like the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So therefore, it is imperative as members of the civil society that as we get closer to the political process, which is election, we are urging once again all the political actors and the authorities to ensure that people are given the freedom to freely discuss some of their political issues, and they can be able to make political decision without any fear or paper.
Okay. Yeah. And as we conclude our discussion, I would like to find out from you your opinion. Juma, you are aware about the literacy rate in this country.
Yeah.
And if much is not done by the concerned bodies, many South Sudanese who are eligible to vote will get a lot of confusion, or they will be confused. What do you think should be done to simplify the messages so that it goes direct to the people to avoid confusion at the end of the day? Because I'm sure during voting day, there will be a lot of confusion. What do you think the NEC, your advice now, the NEC and other partners can do to really make sure the message are simple and straight to the citizens?
Yeah, the NEC has to open its gates to all the people that can support them technically, because for civic education and civic engagement to be comprehensive, you need to bring on board people that can help you in developing different methodologies that can be used to reach as many people as possible. Because look, for example, the disabled. There are those one who are physically and mentally impaired, and they have the same right as other ordinary citizens to participate in the election. So they will need people that can help them to develop those kind of approaches, those kind of methodologies that can be used. If you are an illiterate person, how best can the information be relayed to you so that it can help you to vote in the election when the election comes? So it needs cooperation from the Electoral Commission and also from the international partners to provide all the assistance that is required to facilitate the voting of the people that are illiterate.
Okay. And Constance, from your vast experience, 25 years and above, and you are still counting, what lesson can South Sudan learn from countries that has gone through conflict, conducted election, and they made it successful? What can South Sudan learn from them?
I think South Sudan should be looking at... Again, I know I sound like a broken record, but you know, the basic principles that Juma also listed before. Look at positive examples, the will, the you know, political collective will, and setting a common goal, and you know, entering the political dynamics with following a code of conduct. There's a discussion ongoing right now among political parties on the voluntary code of conduct. Those are the elements. It's will, and you know, this conversation is already happening in South Sudan. So the parties should stay focused. The population should be involved, as we said, and as Juma recognized the importance of involving civil society. So it's not a special recipe. It's playing by the books and making sure that everything is done for the people to establish this much needed sustainable peace.
All right. Thank you so much. That's it we have for today, and we hope to be talking to you all the time for your awareness to our people. I would like to thank my two guests here, Juma Abior Mariero, who is the Executive Director of African Leadership and Reconciliation Ministry. Thank you so much for coming to our studio, and also Constance,
thank you.
The Deputy Chief of the Integrated Electoral System of the United Nations. I also thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, son.